Working Cows Podcast, Episode 69.
Welcome to the podcast that gives producers a platform to discuss and share paradigm-challenging practices. Practices that have increased the effectiveness of their operation and the joy that their families have received from this lifestyle.
Howdy, everybody. It's Clay Connery, host of the Working Cows Podcast, brought to you by the Global Ag Network. I want to start out by thanking you. I closed out last week's show by asking you to share the Working Cows Podcast Facebook page with one person, and some of you went above and beyond. A lot of people were sharing it. I really appreciate that. We did cross that 1,000 likes barrier and are continuing on strong towards 1,100, so thanks a lot for that. Really appreciate your guys' faithfulness in sharing the podcast itself and the social media accounts associated with it. So really excited about this week's episode. I have had an opportunity to sit down with Roland Cruz and Patrick Toomey after their Holistic Management Roadshow and talk to them. We recorded this in a storage closet. I appreciate them humoring my sensibilities about acoustics of a room and finding the most crowded room we could in that echoey hall of the rec center in Buffalo, South Dakota. So here is my conversation with Patrick Toomey and Roland Cruz of Crossroads Ranch Consulting. Roland, Patrick, thanks for joining me today on the Working Cows Podcast.
It is my pleasure to join you, Clay. As we've had a wonderful day in the seminar here working with South Dakota Grassland Coalition. We had about 30, 40 people attend and had some remarkable and very good discussions. So it's kind of exciting, some of the changes I see on the horizon.
Yeah, and thanks for having us on here. So great.
Yeah, I really appreciate you guys taking the time. As a pastor by trade, I can imagine the tiring nature of back-to-back-to-back-to-back days of six-hour sessions. So I really appreciate you guys taking the time today to do that before you head down to Custer tomorrow for the last day of the Holistic Management Roadshow. You raised a lot of great things, kind of talked on the surface of a lot of great topics. And one of the things that we spent quite a bit of time on today was the idea of gardening with livestock. Roland, can you talk a little bit about that and maybe how you're rebranding some familiar terms to holistic management folks with this idea of gardening with livestock?
Yes, Clay, if you read Alan Savory's holistic management textbook, he talks about animal impact. In the holistic management process, we look at the process of how cows, when they graze, they remove the forage. When I talk about gardening with livestock, I'm really focusing on how those hooves and also the dung and some of those things interact with the environment. And the reason I use the term gardening with livestock, just that term gardening gives people a whole different impression versus, as I shared with this group today, the term impact can have a negative connotation. We've seen where cattle have trailed too much in a narrow lane, and people perceive that as negative. And so if we can really start looking at, like I said, with gardening, I'm thinking pretty flowers, abundant produce, some of those things. It's a win situation. So how can we, in a sense, use cattle to create the ecological change that we want?
So you are using this as a branding strategy for maybe people who are outside of the ranching industry looking into it, rather than using some of these terms like impact, you're using the gardening idea. Now, what is it about what the cows are doing that is similar to what you would be doing in a garden, and what are they accomplishing for you on the landscape?
Certainly, to help demonstrate the point, the listeners out there, I tell you, okay, envision opening a pack of garden seeds and then just throwing those seeds over your shoulder. And if we're properly grazing, you will find out in your pastures various plants producing seeds, and those seeds are going to fall to the soil surface. Now, the question, and as I demonstrate the point with a particular person in the room, I says, give me all your garden packs, and they give me all the peas, the radishes, the turnips, the lettuce, and all those things. And I simply, right in your garden spot, open up all those seeds and then throw them on my shoulder, and they sit on top of the soil. And so I asked the people in the audience, I said, how successful will this garden be? Will all those plants germinate? And some will fall in a crack, some will germinate. I've actually experimented with this. What I find, radishes almost need no gardening to germinate, but other plants like carrots and some of those things, if you don't get them properly planted, they don't come up. And again, with the bigger seeds, especially like peas and beans, and that relates to bigger grass seeds like western wheat, as that's pretty good sized seed. And so is again, if we are successfully managing it, and I have found through the last 30 years, we've done a pretty good job of explaining grazing, but I don't find us getting the necessary animal impact to get the regeneration that we're wanting on the land. And that's going to require a much higher stock density than maybe people are accustomed to. The days of old, which I explained to the group, is we got to run at roughly, buffalo of old used to run at 25, 35 head per acre. And through the monitoring that Patrick and I do, we're discovering that, again, if we don't hit that, then we don't get the successional biological changes that we want. And so that's what we're trying to mimic is, and I give people the target that seems to work fairly well. You need to think of 30,000 pounds of livestock per acre. And so if you're running, I got 300 head of cows, and they're weighing roughly 1,000 pounds each, I want to put those 300 head cows on 10 acres, and then I get the gardening.
And the length of the time that they're going to spend on there is different year to year, right? I mean, that's obvious.
Obvious. And the length that I spend with that, if again, I'm going to use that 300 head of cows as an example, it all depends on how much forage is on that site. It may only last 10, 12 hours. If I've got waist-high vegetation, it may be 24, 30 hours. And so it's usually the vegetation that dictates how long I can stay on a particular site. Again, to challenge the group, I've challenged some of them just to even haul some round bales out there so we can elongate that time period so we can get the beneficial effects.
We're going to come back to that, but first I'm going to turn to Patrick here for a second. We talked about some testing questions that you guys use, and one of the testing questions that came up was the idea of gut feeling. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so the testing questions are used to determine if a tool or a management strategy is going to be implemented. And essentially what the gut feeling is you're using your intuition. You're using your natural instinct about whether you think something will work or not. And essentially the way that I put it was, if you feel queasy about something, chances are very good you shouldn't be doing it. If folks on your management team feel that way too, then chances are you shouldn't be doing that management practice as well.
There's generally somebody who brought the idea to the meeting who's already married to the idea. And they're going to have to convince the rest of the group. What is kind of the threshold? When would you say it's time to move forward? Do we wait for everybody to get on board? How would you handle that situation?
So consensus is ideal, but consensus might also be a dream. And in that sense, what I would recommend is try to find the least queasy option. As to kind of put it that way, we may never get consensus. For instance, maybe dad or granddad, they're just setting their ways and they're not doing anything different. So how do we go around that? The way we go around that is maybe they won't let us do it on the whole place, but maybe there's the back 40 that's off the road that no one gets to see. Maybe that's where you can practice these things. Maybe it's, you get the old cow herd instead of the yearlings that they're trying to feed in the feedlot, those kind of things. Try and find niches to start experimenting. And once you can get the experimenting on, you start seeing the results from this. That's when sometimes that hard stance can start to soften.
Sure. Yeah. When the proof is in the pudding, it can be hard to argue with maybe a new or out of the box type of an idea. One of the things that relates to that I think of that is kind of a favorite anecdote of mine, and I don't know if I've shared it on the podcast or not, but you talk about the guy who says, well, here's how I organize my place. I keep the horses by the road for the tourists. I keep the cows by the driveway for the neighbors, and I keep the sheep out back to pay for it all. You know, and
that's a great analogy.
That's my wife and I are attracted to the sheep idea because we live in this area of western South Dakota. We've got Newell Sheep Yards. We've got vets who know what a sheep looks like inside and out, and we see an opportunity there. We've got the wool warehouse. I know people in Billings that ship their wool to Belle Fourche. You know, that's 4.5 hour drive, right, probably 5 hours by truck, you know, and so it seems like an opportunity to me. And so I think that's the direction we're going to head when we are out on our own. But at this point, we're still working on laying some of the groundwork and making some of those plans. And what are some of the other testing questions that you guys encourage people to use? And how do you go about implementing those in a meeting that would be centered around making a decision?
So the testing questions, there's several of them. Cause and effect is one. Does the management activity, is it going to have you achieve your social goals? Is it going to have you achieve your economic goals? Is it going to have you achieve your ecological goals? There's also, we talked about the gut feeling. There's that as well. The biggest testing question is the weakest link. Is this management activity going to improve the weakest part of your operation? If you don't work on that weakest part of your operation, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if that management tool was a success, you won't improve your operation. An example of this is, let's say you have a great land plan, you have a great grazing plan, but you're financially distraught and you're going broke. It doesn't truly matter if you have those two things perfect and going. If you're going broke, you need to fix your finances first. How do they come up when you're making these management decisions? It's having those weekly meetings with your team, having those weekly meetings about, hey, we're going to start doing this, that, and the other thing. And there may be somebody that goes, well, you know, could we try this or that? Or, you know, maybe I don't think that's the true cause of the reason that's going on here. Or how's our finances looking before we decide to put in that $70,000 fence? Is that really something that we need to do? So when you start having those conversations, you start making them regular, then you're going to start having a lot of candid conversations that would be considered prior to implementing holistic management. They're going to be considered every day, whereas before they might have been the once in a blue moon and very hard conversations.
Roland, how much time would you recommend that the average ranch business spends having meetings like that, planning some of those things?
I generally recommend you need to at least do it a minimum once a month. I got several clients that do it once a week, whether it's a Monday morning or Saturday afternoon. They choose a regular time, and then you need to commit to that time. Like any habit, if you repeat it often enough, and that's where I find essentially you need to start working on it is identify for, you know, if you, again, you got a spouse with kids and they're all going to school, don't try to fight that process. Get the whole team involved, saying, if we're going to have a regular meeting, when is the best time to meet? And so you listen to that. The time, again, if you're doing this and you're solving problems along the way, it may only take a couple hours, 2 or 3 hours. If you're procrastinating and not having regular meetings and then things are building up, it may be an all-day meeting. And so the more often you do it, the easier it is, the more in flow you'll get. And so, again, the other thing I recommend with these team meetings, which I found some fair successes, it doesn't always have to be the general manager or the owner that calls the meetings. Again, if we got multiple family members or employees, I recommend that responsibility for calling the meeting and what the subject matter of the meeting gets rotated, because we're trying to share leadership. Is we don't know, we all hope that we're going to live on this earth forever and ever, but we don't know lightning's going to strike, car's going to happen. And if I'm the only one that ever calls a meeting and then I'm out of the picture, people will flounder. And so if I can share that responsibility, it also, I find, it encourages growth in all the whole team. And they can, you know, I may be good at managing cattle or managing finances, but then again, my partner is good at strip grazing, and we're going to talk for the next meeting about how we want to do pasture layout. So that person is a natural for leading that meeting.
Should people, I guess before I toss you the softball question, I'll admit that it's a softball question. Should people expect to be good at these meetings and conducting these meetings the first time they try them, or the first 10 times they try them?
No. I mean, that's I expect people to struggle a little bit. You know, I think, again, if you're kind of the general in the past, been the leader, give them some coaching, help them identify this upcoming meeting next Monday morning. we're going to talk about this. And so let give them some coaching and help them outline some of these things versus, I call it blindsiding them, waiting till Monday morning going, oh, Patrick, by the way, you're going to lead this meeting. And so that'd be what I'd, again, I'd do it beforehand. You lay out a whole month's worth of meetings. Again, each ranch has got differing activities through the month. If we're in the winter months, we're going to do, as Patrick said, some forward land planning, creative planning, and some of those things. If we're in the middle of summertime and we're moving cattle and maybe doing hay or other crops, so, you know, it's the meetings will change. And so you'll want to use those opportunities. I have found, as Patrick and I heard some chuckles the last several days as we're doing this roadshow, from some of the spouses, because as Patrick really stressed that it involves the whole team. And I saw a husband go sit down by the wife and goes, I guess that means I'm going to have to share my feelings with you. And he was kind of beside himself, but he recognized the importance of doing that.
And if I can add to that too, we're not expecting everyone to be perfect. That's ludicrous to believe. But what another thing we need to recognize too is that we also need feedback. And Roland and I have done a great job on this trip, live in presentation, writing down things we can improve on, and at the same time, things we're doing well on. So when we're talking about someone doing something for the first time, we often think about, okay, here's where you messed up, here's where you slipped up, here's where you should improve on. But what about things that they're doing really well too? So we tend to, as humans, evolutionarily, we think negatively because that's what kept us alive. But if we start thinking positively, it actually starts happening better. And then on top of it, the more we're used to giving people feedback back and forth, as soon as that becomes a habit, now we're cooking with peanut oil. Now all of a sudden you can have those candid conversations that we discussed earlier. You can start having those more often and have them be really open conversations.
Ooh, I like deep fried food. Cooking with peanut oil sounds better than cooking with fire. Patrick, you said that the dealing with the weakest link was the most important of the testing questions. How do we discern the difference between the weakest link and the dead wood in a business? So maybe we need to talk about what dead wood is first, and then talk not just the place where you gamble in Western South Dakota, but the dead wood in your business. Talk about that, and what's the difference between dead wood and the weakest link?
So dead wood is going to be financially where you are losing money. So I'm just going to throw, for instance, let's say you have a haying operation, a wheat operation, a cow-calf, and a feedlot operation. And you, at the end of the year, are consistently losing money in the feedlot operation, let's say, just for kicks and giggles. You try and massage out the numbers. You try and cut as often as you can from the variable costs. And if you cannot make that work, it may be time to cut that enterprise loose. That's deadwood. That's what we're looking at there. We're looking specifically at the monetary income that's coming in. We're planning for profit here. We're not just planning to break even. So if we're not at the point on an enterprise where we can make money on it, then we should reconsider that enterprise. Now, if we're starting an enterprise and we're learning as we go as to how to do it, you have a little bit of leeway. But again, we need to set a time limit to how do we do that. Now, to where the weakest link is, this can be, it generally falls into three categories, and that's going to be, it's going to be within your land, it's going to be within your pocketbook, your money, or it's going to be social. And the way you discern that is you have to look at your farm and ranch in a very objective manner. You have to be honest with yourself. You have to be honest with those around you. You have to be open. You have to have conversations that might be tough, because especially if it's social. So, for instance, let's say folks are, let's say folks really don't like being in the tractor for 12 hours a day during planting, harvest, haying, all that stuff. And that comes up, but that's what we've done for years. That's what this ranch is known for. That's going to be a hard conversation for somebody to have. But if that is the weakest link, we have to try and solve that, or else you have that. That's how families can break apart, and that's the last thing that we want to see happen here. And what we found is if we start having these conversations, if we start opening up, if we start chipping away at the granite, we may be able to soften that enough to where maybe not everyone's completely happy, but everyone's heard. And generally, when people can be heard, that's when people can be satisfied with doing something that they may not necessarily be happy with. And again, going back to the land as well, if our grazing plan isn't working out, we got to switch it up. We have to switch it up, or else we're going to continually overgraze or continually undergraze or continually do both. And we're not going to make any progress going forward towards our land goals. And it all goes to what our goals are. We need to have very clear, defined goals for money, for land, and for people on our farms and ranches. And we need to reverse engineer ways to build forward from that. So, Roland, do you want to add to that? Because I know that you were kind of looking, so.
One thing real quick before we let Roland add to that is that on the first episode that I had Roland on, which was episode 14, workingcows.net/14, it will be also linked at today's show notes page, which is workingcows.net/69. The show notes page for today will be workingcows.net/69. Roland, the pretense on which I had him on that episode was holistic goal setting. And so, it's been a while since I've listened to it, but I'm sure that's in there somewhere. I know we talked about managing the triple bottom line and some of those things. So if you want to check that out, it will be linked at the show notes page for today. So sorry.
You asked like Deadwood. Again, you want to do, I'm going to say, and that will take some preparation and understanding how you spend money. One of them I've seen, I'm working on some ranches, I'll just take is like general fire property insurance. We purchase a new vehicle, we build a new building, a Quonset storage shed for our operation, and we add things to our insurance docket, as I call it, but rarely do we drop things. And one of the things, like I've worked on ranches where they got multiple old vehicles, and some of those vehicles never leave the ranch property, and yet we're still putting licenses and insuring them on there. And well, if we don't ever put them on the public road, we don't need full protection out there. And so we can drop that. And the same thing is, I'll just say there's an old chicken coop in Lightning. I question when I work with clients is, if that building burned, would you replace it? And if the answer is no, then, like I said, I always recommend clients sit down with their insurance agent every 3-4 years and review what's on the docket and then see if we can move things. Because, like I said, we have a tendency to add things, but we rarely have a tendency. And it may only be $500 or $1,000 that changes. It's not huge. But, again, if I can now take that $500 or $1,000 and earmark it for something that really generates wealth, and that's one of the key things is because insurance is an overhead expense. It's necessary. I'm not advocating that you get rid of your liability protection, your fire protection. You're going to need it. But let's minimize that expense. The other thing that really does tie looking for deadwood is it ties it back to one of the testing guidelines, which is just cause and effect. And let's say if I've got really high animal health costs, I'm using a lot of medication, you need to ask the question why. And again, maybe it's because I'm calving in February on a lot of, in feedlots and broken ground. I got a lot of scours. So is there a way, what's the cause of those scours? Maybe it's because I'm doing it in very tight confinement versus, and as I challenged the group today, if we're willing to maybe move calving back into more of a, I call it green calving on green grass into April, and now I'm able to calve in fresh pastures. I've worked with enough ranches, I can get rid of a lot of those medicated costs. And so that ties it back into the same thing as just so really, and again, it does require sitting down. I've had some really high machinery costs, and I get the employees involved. A lot of them, the employees got ideas. Nobody's just bothered to ask them, saying, how do we cut these costs of this equipment, costs of vehicle maintenance, some of those things. And so that's how you can get rid of some of the deadwood.
So let's turn back and talk about the fouling effect that you talked about. And it connects with what we started with is the idea of gardening with livestock, that we're grazing in a high density way. You know, you mentioned 30,000 pounds per acre. And so that's going to create a very deep cover of manure and urine, and that's going to naturally cause them to move on. That was a really good point that you brought up about why did the bison move on. So I'm just going to let you riff on that for a little bit, Roland.
Yeah, what I've done some research, you can go to archive journals, Lewis and Clark, other journals, historical accounts, and they usually say that the buffalo, I've done some extrapolation, but the buffalo traveled of old in fairly large herds, half million, million head, So they cover a fairly wide landscape. And when you put that many in, I mean, they described the landscape, and there's one by Gallatin County, and I broke it down, and that they were traveling 25, 35 head per acre. And buffalo on average weigh about 1,000 pounds. So, and then my monitoring that Patrick and I do, we've also seen where clients, if they get that 30,000 plus pounds, ecological changes occur. But again, as we're out there, when you start putting that amount of animals on it, there's rarely a square yard that's not stepped on, or a square foot that doesn't have an animal hoof print in it. The other thing is they start defecating the land. And correlating it back to the buffalo, I asked a group, what caused a million or half million head of buffalo to move from one area to the other?
I gave the wrong answer. I'll just throw that out there. I said predators, so that was my just thinking. I knew where you were going. I said predators, but you said this. Sorry.
Yeah, and so what the predators do of old, whether it's Native Americans or wolves or even predators close to the watering point, is it kept those animals bunched and moving. And the wolves didn't get up and sit on a ridge in the morning saying, okay, there's a half million or million head of buffalo. We got to move them across the river over here. What the wolves did is they kept circling that herd. And so if a calf couldn't keep up a lame bull and they fell out of the herd, unfortunately, they maybe became lunch for that day. And so that as that herd kept milling around, crapping and defecating, urinating on where they're standing, it began to smell. And as I commonly joke about it, as that lead matriarch cow kind of goes, sniffs and smells and goes, it's starting to stink here, is that matriarch cow would start moving in one direction and that herd would follow her. And so as you look at it, those herds were fairly constantly moving. They weren't moving at great speeds unless they were spooked by something. But and so I've seen, again, historical accounts from pioneers where they had to wait till a buffalo herd passed in front of them. It may take a day and a half before they got out of the way so they could proceed on. And so as you can envision that many animals defecating, it began to stink to high heaven. And I actually had an actual experience. I was doing some custom grazing on Bozeman Pass. I put 120 head of cows on a fairly small area, about 5 acres. And I went out to check the water. I skipped the area the first time because there was some. It was a junkyard, and I didn't want to kill cows with lead batteries. So they got it cleaned up, and then I grazed the second time. This is mid-August. And there was still a lot of feed out there. And I checked the water, and we only had one wire electric fence around this area, and the water was fine. So I got back on the four-wheeler. As the cows saw me about to leave, they started bellowing. I'm close to the interstate, and the fences aren't that great, and I'm going, I don't want these cows to break out and get on the interstate because then I'm liable. And so I got up back off the four-wheeler, climbed over the fence, and got in the middle of this pasture, and I took 3 whiffs, and I knew, despite there was still unused, ungrazed grass, but it had all been covered with manure, and it stunk. I could smell it. And so I had to move them out of there, and they'd only been in there about a day and a half. And they could have probably stayed, grass-wise, they could have stayed another day and a half, but they wouldn't have any part of it. And so that's what caused the cattle to move. And they gladly, when I dropped the fence, they gladly went elsewhere. And so that's the fouling effect. And so what I kind of demonstrated in several examples is I may have a watering point on a river, and so I can build one strip graze off the river, and then I'll cross fence it, and I can hold an animal for 3-4 days in one area, and then I pull that fence and rebuild it 100, 200, 300 yards down, and then give them that new area. And so in the example, I said every 5 days we were moving off this, still going back to the river, but the fouling effect would make the cattle cross that area they just grazed and go to the area. And you even look at when they ruminate, they're always laying right next to that fence. So I don't have to necessarily back fence. The caution with fouling is it will only last as long as you don't get any rain. And one example, I was working with Jay Barrell in Montana, is we got a rainstorm, and we were grazing our last strip. We got an inch and a half rainstorm. It washed all the manure off the plants that we grazed 15 days ago. And as the cows went to the river and then they come back across this, they discovered all these fresh green shoots no longer fouled, and they started overgrazing. So it's time to move.
And that was my next question. So we covered that. So can you give me some examples of ecological changes? You mentioned that with gardening, with livestock, you start to see some ecological changes. Can you give me a couple examples of that?
Yes. In the class, I showed diagram slides of one ranch that comes to particular right away. Patrick and I have worked on it this last summer, is the Germ Ranch. And it's called the Road 1 pasture. And this is short grass prairie. Their average precip's 12 to 14. And about 4 or 5 years ago, we started getting switchgrass growing up in predominantly cheatgrass, some crested wheat. There's some needle and thread. But this is a warm season tall grass plant. And if you look at the historical counts of this area around Gillette, this is short grass prairie. We're not supposed to get a mid-grass, tall grass, switchgrass. And I was back there. Patrick and I, again, had to do some work this fall. We had a very favorable season. This ranch this year, last year, received 18 inches. And so I wanted to see how the switchgrass responded to this favorable precip. So I'm walking around going around. And all of a sudden, I look on this hillside, and there's this bright red purple plant that's about three and a half feet tall. It caught my eye. It's big blue stem. And the neat thing that you might say, well, what's so extraordinary about it? We didn't seed that plant. Where the seed come from is it can be literally a mystery. But what I find, what I explain to the group is with our mismanagement, I'm kind of looking right now as we're doing this interview, we got a table in front of us, and at the corner of this table are four legs. But envision, rather than these four stiff steel legs, we put four coiled springs up there. And then, as I asked in the class, I put 5, 6, 10 bodies on this spring, standing on this table. This table will sink down. And so as I asked one smart lady in the group, I says, if this and we're about to eat lunch and the table's only 6 inches off the ground, I asked four gentlemen to go out into the truck and get a handyman jack back up. This bright lady says, Roland, get your big butt off the table and the spring will spring back up. And that's what I am finding is as we start increasing the stock density and the gardening effect, we are getting this regeneration of land. You don't have to spend an enormous amount of money on grass seed. As I asked several people that are in the classroom farming, and I says, we're about to, again, this spring, will you have to put herbicide on? Because if we don't, will we end up, and what do we expect to farm? Well, they'll be covered with weeds again. So the soils are filled with seeds. We just, ecologically, they're not in an ecological healthy state to express themselves into. It may take 5-10 years, but it's amazing. As I crisscross multiple states, the biological diversity keeps springing forward, which is exciting.
I'm gonna ask Patrick one last question, and I want to respect your guys' time. You got a couple hours of driving ahead of you. One of the statements you made early on today was that the importance is placed on the questions that we ask, not on the answers at which we arrive. What can you talk a little bit about that?
Mm-hmm. So a lot of times as an independent consultant, folks call me and they say, hey, I do this for me. I have this problem. What's the answer? And then I'll ask them a question and they'll go, okay, well, here's the answer to that question. What's the answer? Then I'll give them another question, though. What's the answer? We, in the consulting business, we don't come up with answers. We don't know your ranch like you do. We're not the experts of Joe Schmo Farmer's Ranch. We're just not. What we know is the holistic management process. We understand how the ecosystem functions. We understand how grazing animals graze. We understand how their fouling effect works. We understand how they garden with livestock. We understand how the plants affect that. we understand the big picture. We can't, Roland, how many clients do we have roughly?
Regular clients, we usually deal with about 30 to 40, but I can't always predict. I mean, the phone's ringing. I always pick up new ones. So we're probably dealing with 50 to 100 a year.
How many different states?
Eight, really.
So 8 different states, 40 different ranches. We can't be there all the time. We're not going to be able to go in and pound the T-post. We're not going to be able to do that. But what we can do is ask the correct questions to help you figure out what's right for your ranch. We can give you examples of what worked elsewhere. We can give you insight to a decision that you may have based on our prior knowledge or based on your whole and use similar experiences that we've had with other similar holes in the past. But ultimately, what it comes down to is each ranch is an individual hole within this whole ranching ecosystem of the U.S. And because of that, and because Roland and I are only two people that live in Bozeman, Montana, and Rapid City, we can't be everywhere all the time. We rely on our clients and our farmers and ranchers across America to help make those management decisions for us. And the way that we go about doing that is asking those questions. And when we remove the consultant side of it, how can you apply this on your ranch? We'll start asking those critical questions about your farm and ranch. Once you start asking those critical questions about your farm and ranch, you'll be able to better understand why you do what you do. And let's say that may not be a good thing, then you can change that. Or let's say it is a good thing, and how can we improve upon that?
You mentioned, Roland, that you had recently done some gone back to some ranches that you consulted with in the early days. Can you just share a couple of takeaways from that kind of 20-year anniversary project, I guess it was?
Certainly, yeah. The Holistic Management International was celebrated. They asked me to I worked with these ranches in 85, 86, 87, some of them even 88. And Holistic Management International in Albuquerque, New Mexico was celebrating their 20th anniversary. So we're looking at 206, 207, 208. And I just went back and they asked me to interview those ranches that went to a holistic management course. Some of them I consulted with, some of them I didn't, but the Three Bar Cattle Company, which is out in Nenzel, Nebraska, I remember visiting with them. They're about the same age as I am. I'm right now in my 60s. The neat thing is they have brought their three sons back and incorporated them into the operation. And as I sat down and we talked about, and I've been in their pastures, the pastures had improved in production. They're carrying probably 40, 50, 60% more cattle on any given year. Despite all the other changes, I asked, well, what was the most profound effect that you, a result of you coming to this, getting the holistic management training? They went to Albuquerque, New Mexico, took a course from Alan and myself and learned about that holistic management process. And they said one of the most profound effects was that in 20 years, every year they made a true profit. And as I challenged the group, I says, if we had perfect weather in northern Nebraska, and everybody shook their head no. And I says, well, have we had consistent livestock markets where you can consistently make a profit? And their response was no. So one of the things I stressed to the group is making a profit is not by accident, it's by design. And you actually have to, as you sit down and create the upcoming year, and we're in 2019 right now, and so hopefully most of you got a 2019 financial plan. But as you look at that plan, how much profit are you planning for? I just use the example, if you're planning on generating $500,000 of income, and it doesn't take that large a ranch to generate $500,000 of income, cash or cattle, grain or cattle. And so I said, before you plan any expenses, you sit down with your team and analyze that and say, of $500,000, what percentage of that's going to be true profit? If it's 10%, that's $50,000. If it's 20%, it's $100,000. And so you sit down with your team and give yourself a target of profitability. And then so you set that actually, and you pull that in part of your financial planning process that Patrick and I teach, is we set that money aside. So I earmark $100,000 for planned profit. That leaves me out of $500,000, leaves me $400,000 that we got to pay for, keep the cattle fed, keep the lights on, pay ourselves some salary so we can keep groceries in the refrigerator and some of those things, but we let that our expenses rise to that. And it's a trick I've learned even through Dave Ramsey, who teaches ranch. What's the name of that class?
Dave Pratt?
Dave Ramsey with the
Financial Peace University.
Thank you, Financial Peace University. And my wife has gotten off on that. I teach financial planning, but my wife never could understand that. But she understood that, and it's really even helped us with our own personal budget. But you always set aside a plan before you start paying your expenses, groceries, electricity, everything else. You set aside a plan, set aside money, and it works. Because and then you play the trick as your mind sees. Okay, we brought in $500,000. We spent $500,000. You just kind of hide that $100,000. It's called planned profit. It's paying yourself first is what it is.
So we could go on a long time here. But I do want to talk a little bit about the future for you guys. First of all, where you said that we would need to be objective in analyzing our ranch businesses. And this is another one of those softball questions for both of you. Where might one go to find an objective third party to help them analyze their ranch business?
And Patrick alluded to it a couple times. I'll just go there. The holistic management process is a 5 and 6 step process. And the very first step is analyzing the whole that you're managing. And I've got clients, they're doing really well, but they still ask me to come in on an annual basis because it's a third party review. We can do a lot of self, you know, lying to ourselves as I look in the mirror and deny that I'm getting older or things are changing or some of those things versus that's one of the things I tell my clients. I'm not going to, you know, if I do a land health assessment, I'm not going to lie on how healthy the land is. I'm going to call it as I see it. And so same thing if I look at their financial picture. If I do a lot of group team facilitation, bringing in that third part, I've actually, as I help clients with succession planning, and you and I talked a little bit about that before, Clay, is I will ask that older generation some questions that you might, as a younger generation, get not the response you want. It's so some of the biggest wrecks that I will share this on there, the mistakes I've made, I tried to facilitate some of my own family meetings. Mm-hmm. And so my recommendation goes back to a gut check. If you feel uncomfortable having a team meeting, bring in a third party. It will really help facilitate, smooth that out, because I've seen family members call each other names that would turn your face red and purple and blue, and you just get angry. And so bringing in a third party makes it, I can diffuse the situation most of the time and keep the discussion healthy. That's what needs to happen.
Both Ranching for Profit and or Ranch Management Consultants and Crossroads Ranch Consulting find themselves at a crossroads of transition. How's that going? What's that look like for you, both of you, I guess?
Well, as I shared with the group, I'm no longer a spring chicken. I'm in my 60s, and I've got a number of clients I've worked with, as I said, for 30 years, and they're my age. The average age of the American rancher farmer is also 60, 65, depending on what county you're in. What I am finding struggles with is what's going to happen next. 50 to 60% of the ranchers I'm dealing with have no idea. The family members have left, and they don't know who's going to take over. And I don't believe a ranch is truly sustainable until we get that next generation. Now, if it's non-family members, we need to make that happen. I've facilitated a number of the discussions. What I had one unique client, as I was challenging him, that I call it, they spun the table on me, and they asked me, as I'm rapidly approaching 66, way too quickly, is I go, Roland, what are you going to do with your Crossroads Ranch Consulting? And that you've been running this company for 20 net years now, and are you simply going to hang up the retired sign? And so, as you've heard Patrick's voice on this recording, I had to face my own issues. And so June of last year, I hired Patrick Toomey as an associate. And I expect him within 2 or 3 years, he's going to be doing 80-90% of the work. I told Patrick as I approach, I don't see myself retiring rapidly in 2 years, but I definitely would like to pull back like 50%. And that's where Patrick comes in.
You did a great job, by the way, today. Thank you. Patrick, you, as somebody who speaks publicly for a living, I just wanted to let you know that.
I always have a problem with shutting up, so that's my issue.
Me too.
And I just wanted to touch on that succession plan too. You know, the stars kind of aligned for me to find Roland, and it, you know, that doesn't always happen. But I just wanted to say to Roland, thank you for giving me this opportunity. I know we've had our bumps, we've had our bruises. You know, we're 500 miles away, so things get lost in translation. So that happens. But at the same time, if you are going through something like this, it's candid conversations. It goes back to we're social beings. We didn't evolve separate from everything. We always had a group around us, and just having those kind of conversations help, you know, so that way when someone is ready to retire, it's not just I'm out. You know, you have a plan, you've talked about it, you have an idea what's going on.
Good. So yes, taking up lots of your time today, and I appreciate you guys' patience and being willing to do this. Where should people go to get a hold of you if they want to call you up and bring you in to do some consulting, set some goals, start a succession plan, any of those things? Where would people go to find you?
If they're on Facebook, they can just simply type in Crossroads Ranch Consulting, and they'll find me on Facebook. They can also type in Crossroads Ranch Consulting, Google it. My website is www.crossroadsranchconsulting.com. And so they'll find the contact information for Patrick and me as well. And so that's what I'd encourage, is just either Google it find us on Facebook. We usually have at least posts. We've posted several times about this roadshow. I'm not a religious fanatic that on Facebook where you'll see me posting something every 6-8 hours. If we're on the road like we are right now, there may be several days where we don't do anything. But We always try to post, I try to challenge my clients if I see interesting land changes, stories. I'll share stories from clients. If people post things on another ranch, I will cross-post it, repost it, some of those things. So I'm always trying to keep you on the cutting edge.
And again, show notes page for today, all that will be linked there, workingcows.net/69. Patrick, Roland, thanks for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Really appreciate, again, their humoring me in that storage closet in Buffalo, South Dakota after their holistic management roadshow. Very good discussion with them there. Look forward to lots of future discussions with them. Really, really excited about the partnership with Crossroads Ranch Consulting. Coming up next week, we're going to talk to Dave Pratt of Ranch Management Consultants. We're going to talk to him about owner value and about how we as ranch managers deliver value to all those who have a legitimate claim to ownership of a ranch business and just some of the ways that we need to be thinking about those different things. So really encourage you to tune in next week for episode 70 of the Working Cows podcast with Dave Pratt.
We invite you to visit workingcows.net to subscribe to the show via iTunes or Stitcher. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, resources from our guests, and the industry leaders who have influenced them. For more ideas on putting your cows to work for you in a more profitable way, tune in next week.